Okay, here we are. This is going to be fascinating. And pull up a chair, open your mind, open your ears. And if you're online, by all means, go to Rents.com and expect to see some really remarkable images that we're going to bring you this hour. It's going to be very fascinating. And then we'll go into the second hour and complete the program. This has to do with a lot of different things. Most specifically, as you know, the John F. Kennedy assassination. And it is something that is such a part of American history now that I think that you can't spend enough time on it. We're very honored tonight to have with us our colleague and friend of so many years, the man who knows more about the JFK assassination than probably anyone else on the planet, Mr. James Mars. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Jeffy.
How are you?
I'm tolerable.
That's not what I heard from your wife.
Well, hey, she's prejudiced.
All right. Now, for those of you who know a little bit about remote viewing, you're going to know a lot more after tonight. With us is Dick Allgaier. As you know, Dick is a friend of mine, a colleague, 38 years, a professional news journalist in television news, an anchorman, a reporter. He has done it all. He is in Hawaii. He is also a gifted remote viewer, as is his colleague, Daz Smith, and they both work together with Courtney Brown of the Farsight Institute. Are you there, Dick?
I am. Hello, Jeff, and hello, Jim.
Hello, Dick. Good to talk with you. But I got a lodge complaint, though.
A what?
Are you ready? Yeah. I've spent 50 years, more than 50 years, investigating, researching the Kennedy assassination, and you have our remote viewing session and tell me everything I already found out.
Now, that's...
It could have saved me 50 years.
Listen carefully to what Jim is saying. And as I said, and I'll repeat it, he knows more about this through hard legwork. He has interviewed and spoken to more of the principals and the semi-principals and the tangential folks involved with the murder of President Kennedy than anyone.
I taught a course on the Kennedy assassination at the University of Texas for 30 years.
I didn't know it was 30. Wow.
Started in 1976 and ended in 2007, I guess.
Okay, now let me ask Dick Allgaier, who is a professional journalist who knows an awful lot, and about remote viewing. Where is it now? Courtney Brown and Dick Allgaier and Daz Smith, who we'll have on maybe next week or the week after to talk further about this issue, have viewed the JFK assassination, but they didn't know that's the target they had been given. They were given an envelope with a piece of paper and random numbers on it. That's it. You have to understand that. There's no front loading. In other words, they weren't tipped off as to what they were going to be looking for or how to interpret what the numbers mean. They go into a state. It's a very calm state. The ego is suspended. And they
meditated.
They begin to write down, draw images and information that they get. So tell us about remote viewing, Dick, a little bit for those that don't know much about it.
I'll be glad to do that. But before I do, I just want to say that it is one of the great honors of my life to be on a program with Jim Mars and have him comment on my work. As you said, I was a professional journalist for about 4 decades, and I consider Jim Mars to be the best of the best. Jim, thank you for your work. And for the listeners, you should read all of Jim Mars' books.
If you read all of his books, you'll have a college education.
Hey, might I point out that I have a book called Psy Spies, PSI Spies, which is the true story of America's psychic warfare program. It's the history and the overview of remote viewing. And I'm not going to say I know more than Dick, but I was onto this back in the 90s. When did you start remote viewing, Dick?
After it became public knowledge. And I just read your book, by the way, again, So I just read it. I just finished it last night, as a matter of fact. Okay, let's backtrack. Jim, how did you get onto remote viewing, or how did you become such a far-out guy? Because you were, like me, a mainstream reporter, and the qualities of a reporter are curiosity and skepticism.
Right.
And that was a really secret thing back then. How did you,
let me say one thing here before we get an answer to that good question. The first time I really heard about it was when Robert Gates said that it didn't work and they were disbanding the Stargate program. I said, what? What program? I didn't know we had a program on remote viewing.
That
yes, the Army did.
That was in 1995, wasn't it?
That's right. And I said to myself, wait a minute, if this works, they're not dumping anything into the trash can. That's a lie.
Exactly. And it was. Okay. Dick, in answer to your question, after the success of my book on the Kennedy assassination, Crossfire, which came out in the late 80s, I'd go around and say, well, what do you think is the next deep, dark, secret government cover-up? And almost unanimously across the country, from editors and publishers to cab drivers, I got the response, we'd like to know the truth about UFOs. And I said, okay, so I start digging into that. And I suddenly came across an article by Ed Dames, who had made a talk at a convention and said he was with the military and they had been trained to use the psychic phenomena and they saw UFOs and they came from here and they went to there. Mm-hmm. He sounded like, you know, very factual. And I said, wow, I got to get hold of this guy. Well, I did. And I found out that he and Mel Riley and David Morehouse were about to get out of the military and they were all part of the Stargate program. And they had decided that the public needed to know about this. So they had already contacted an agent in New York, and they said, we need a good writer, and I became the writer. And I started researching about remote viewing about 1992, and by 1995, I had a manuscript in for my book, Sci-Spies, with a subsidiary of Random House, and I was thinking I'm going to have the biggest scoop of my career.
Yes, you were, I'm sure.
And then in the summer of 1995, after they already had advanced sales of my book and were ready to go to the printer, and I had passed the legal vetting, mm-hmm. They suddenly, my editor was left, and they put a new one in. They brought in a new lawyer and told me not to contact him. And then they said, we can't publish this book. But as you probably are well aware, Dick, if a publisher pays you some advance and has a contract and then cannot publish the book, you are required to repay the advance. Okay. No, they gave me the rights to the book back and paid me the rest of the advance. Basically, here's the money, go away. And at the very time this was happening is when they suddenly got Ray Hyman and Jessica Utz to study remote viewing for the CIA. Uh-huh. And about 2 months after they had canceled my book, they came out with an announcement saying, yes, we've been doing this, but we didn't think it was very good, and we don't think we got any use out of it, so we're not going to do this anymore. Is that not incredible?
What a coincidence.
And then then what happened? They gave Jim Schnabel your book, Jim, and Jim Schnabel published.
That's true.
And he worked for the CIA. He worked for the CIA.
That's true. A few months later, Jim Schnabel published that book out of England, and it basically was my book.
How much of it was yours?
Yep.
Did they water it down? Did they twist it?
Yeah, well, that was the whole purpose, Jeff, was to spin the whole thing.
Of course.
I think what happened was, I'm pretty confident that what happened was, they knew I was writing this thing, and they knew I was talking to these guys, because, hell, I tried to contact everybody that I could that was already in the program. But this was a classified program, and a few people would talk a little bit to me, but a lot of people would not talk to me. Okay, but I had enough to go on. Dick, you know how it is. Three sources, you can write something, right?
So, yep.
So, I think they knew.
So that was about
what was happening. They knew it was going to come out, but what they had not counted on was I didn't just take these three guys' words for it. I talked to everybody I could, plus researched the phenomena, took it all the way back to the Bible, okay, brought it forward to all of the psychic research that had been done, and then ended up by pointing out, which is absolutely true, that every single one of the military-trained remote viewers that were in the Grill Flame or Stargate program, they were never officially tasked to go look at UFOs, and yet every single one of them had a personal experience with UFOs because they're just there and they see them, you know.
Well, even Joe McMonagle went to Mars,
right.
You know, and they've been to the moon. They've been all over the place in their travels, remote viewing wise. This now two months after your book met its twist in the road. Is that when Gates made his announcement that we're dropping this?
They canceled my book in, I believe, July or August of 95. And then it was about that same time that they ordered the study. So it was like October, maybe early November of 95.
I saw him make that announcement, and I swear to you, I openly laughed, and then I began to pursue it on this program. And one of the first people I got on was Joe McMonagle.
Right.
And Joe was on, I don't know, a dozen times or more. And then from there, Paul H. Smith, Lynn Buchanan, and Aunt Morehouse, all the rest of them.
Yeah.
So we've been there on this program over the years. Your book, Psi Spies, was brought out under what circumstances then?
Well, that went for, I don't know, that went several more years until I finally found a smaller publisher who agreed to publish it, and this was New Page Books, and they really did a nice job with it, and so finally it came out in 2007.
Ah, jeez.
But they did a really nice job of it.
Better late than never.
Exactly. And before I forget about it, and before we get into all this, I want you and the audience and Dick to understand this. Dad's and Dick's remote viewing, which overlaps so well, there's so many parallels, is not the only remote viewing done on the Kennedy assassination. In my book, Psi Spies, Mel Riley, on my by my request, not knowing what the target was, I asked him to remote view the Kennedy assassination, and he got essentially the same information as Daz and Dick.
Oh, that's fascinating. So
also need to know that Joe McMonagle, in one of his books, he took a look at the Kennedy assassination, and he says the exact same thing as the other three.
You gave Mel Riley a bunch of numbers in an envelope and said, here. Will you remote view this? Now, I want you people out there to understand, he didn't give Mel Riley a piece of paper with the JFK assassination written on it. It was just a bunch of random numbers.
That's right.
Riley has no ability to know what he's going to remote view.
And that's, it was an incredible experience because he sat down. He was just kind of confident, kind of cocky. You know, we were all having a good time. And he sits down. He starts going through the protocols, marking stuff down. Dick knows exactly what I'm talking about. And then he starts drawing this thing. He's doing this. And he's trying, he said, now there's a, and then he suddenly got up and left.
And he walked out?
Yeah, he got up and left. And I said, what happened? Well, it turned out he went out to have a smoke. And he came back and he was so shaken up. And he said, it's the Kennedy assassination, isn't it? And I said, yes. And I said, you know, what's the problem? Why are you so shaken up? He says, because I have had my career in the military, and I always believed the government story of one lone nut.
Oh,
he said,
my.
So it's not true.
Oh, my. Wow. That's an amazing little story. Wow. All right. What we're going to do tonight is talk in detail and invite you all to look at pictures of Dick Allgaier's remote viewing of a target he had no prior knowledge of, just numbers. Dick, take it away.
Okay, well, I first heard of remote viewing back in the very early 90s. I was reading a book by Howard Blum, or Blum, Howard
Blum. Oh,
B-L-U-M.
Yes,
Howard Blum, yes.
Blum, he's a fine writer.
Out there.
Yeah.
Out there, he wrote a book about extraterrestrials.
Yes, he
and
did.
In the book, he told a story of a government psychic called a remote viewer that was at a table working a target and said, hey, there's something flying through here under the water, and he drew a UFO. And he referenced remote viewing in it. I remember reading that thinking, remote viewing, that's interesting. What would that be? Then I heard about it on late night radio. I was working as a television news anchor man, and I lived on the other side of the island in Hawaii, and I would, driving to work in the afternoon, have news radio on to hear the news of the day. They constantly update national local sure. news. Going home, it was our friend, you-know-who, Mr. Bell, mm-hmm. on late night. This was at 11 p.m. in Hawaii, and I heard him doing a story with, God, what was the guy from, the abduction guy from Harvard, the PhD?
Oh, Mac, John Mac.
Yeah, John Mac. And I went, wow, this is interesting. Started listening to that show, and he interviewed Joe McMonagle, Lynn Buchanan, Paul Smith, Courtney Brown.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I became fascinated in it. So Ed Dames had a connection to Hawaii. I went and met Ed Dames. I studied Lynn Buchanan stuff. I went to Courtney Brown's Farsight and was immersing myself in this. And someone here in Hawaii mentioned that there was a former military guy that had been a remote viewer that was teaching it. I said, oh, Ed Dames. They said, oh, no, not Ed Dames, someone else, this guy named Glenn. This guy had retired. Glenn Wheaton had retired in 92 and was cut off. Once you retire, you can't play with them anymore. And so he was a remote viewer on his own here in Hawaii. And I think he was like hanging out at psychic fairs, trying to see what civilians could do in this realm. But he stood out because once, you know, you're a Green Beret, you can tell someone's a Green Beret. I mean, he didn't look right at the psychic fairs. And someone approached him and said, what's up? And he's, well, I kind of do something sort of like this, and admitted it. They begged him to teach. And I got hooked up with that original class, or one of the original classes. And Glenn said, okay, if you guys want to learn this, I'm not going to charge money for it. No money. You show up every Friday night at 7 o'clock and I'll show you what to do. And I did that for many, many years. I've trained with him for 18 years. It wasn't a one-week class. It wasn't like the intermediate, pay me another $2,000. It was constant. Glenn wanted to clone himself. And so I'm the product of that. So
well,
that's how I got there.
That's quite a compliment that he would take you into his life that closely and transmit, and imbue you with all of his skills. So that's how Dick Allgaier came to be. But you have a certain innate ability that he recognized and nurtured.
Maybe. I suppose so. But it was a lot of hard work. It was in the beginning, I was doing 2 4-hour classes a week. And then I spent hours and hours and hours at his home, privately,
yeah.
in class.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like a college PhD.
Well, you told me
course.
Years ago about this, and it wasn't a lark. It was hard work, really hard work. So you are as well trained as they get. Now, let's talk about tonight. What we have is Courtney Brown at the Farsight Institute. Daz Smith and Dick Allgaier are the two viewers that work with Courtney primarily. So what happened? You got contacted by Courtney and he said, here's your next target. And you get an envelope with a bunch of numbers written on a piece of paper?
I get an email, and I'll tell you that the last target I had remote viewed for Courtney Brown was Iapetus, which is a moon of Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And I was none too pleased with that. I mean, to spend a lot of, I didn't care. I mean, I really don't care about a moon of Iapetus. And they spent a lot of time and energy and did that.
Yeah.
And that was my last taste of remote viewing. Well, I did a number of validation targets to keep myself, keep my skills up. Just like I did the carousel ride at the Iowa State Fair, which was just a blind number that's on the internet. So I'm doing stuff like that. And then Courtney emails us and say, we're going to do a project. We want you to do four targets. Here's your first target. And get to work.
And the pay was really great.
Oh, yeah. It's just...
You know that line, James.
hey, Dick, come on. You know, you found out as well as I do that nobody pays big for truth.
No, they'll penalize the hell out of you. Okay, so this was assigned to you through email. That's how I sent you the numbers. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, what it was told to me was target 14A. So 14A.
That narrows it right down, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, I assigned it my own. I sat there and I got quiet for about 10 minutes, meditated, and I wrote a piece of paper, and I went to my computer, and I get a random letter and number generator, and it generated ELG7-MIC3. So I wrote down ELG7-MIC3 is Courtney Brown's mystery, target 14A. Oh, Jim, here's an interesting sidelight for you about casting.
No break, Todd. Thank you. Go ahead, Dick.
Oh, well, we are doing this for free tonight. Jeff's not going to make any money. Okay.
That's right.
You know how they use coordinates, Jim, like 1234-7368 or something like that?
Right.
Glenn noticed that they had been remote viewing for like 20 years and that some of those numbers were coming up again and had already been tasked to something else. And so the targets were getting polluted because if I assigned the number 1378-4672 to the Kennedy assassination, and then somebody else gets that same 1378-4362 and assigns it to the Brooklyn Bridge, the viewer will get both of them.
Right. Yeah.
So Glenn and his viewers decided, well, we're going to go to letters. So they started generating, and we do practice targets like ABCD-EFGH, unless something comes up like, you know, SHI something, we'll toss that one back. And then we do a combination alphanumeric for operational. So anyway, I generated ELG7-MIC3. I had no idea what it was. And at that point, I could not talk to Courtney about that by email or in person. And I had no contact with Daz.
That would pollute the whole thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So there's no target talk, and I don't talk to Daz at all. And I got the target in about, what was it? July, I think, July or August. It was last summer.
And, when you found out, when you're doing this, and you're keeping Courtney abreast of this, I don't know where I was in line, but when you told me what it was, you were really excited and stunned. I remember this.
I thought I knew what it was by the end of the session, and I still didn't have feedback. I couldn't talk to Daz.
Right.
So I finished in August, late August, and I can't talk to anybody, and I can't know. I think I might have remote viewed the Kennedy assassination, but I hey, Courtney, and he goes, Dick, you know, we can't talk about this. We will have a talk in a month. When everything's done.
I just want Courtney to know that Dick did not disclose anything before its time to me, and I mean that. All right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I eventually, once I got feedback, I contacted you. I thought, Jim Mars has got to see this. So I contacted you to get all of Jim Mars.
Yeah,
thinking
we connected you right up. And it's to Jim's credit, because he is, I would imagine, often still contacted by people who really are just going to waste his time. He's been there, he's done that, The book Crossfire was updated, what, two years ago, year and a half ago?
Yeah, now, 2013.
2013. And it is the definitive work on the Kennedy assassination. Definitive. Crossfire. Jim Mars. Period. End of story. All right, Dick, go ahead.
Well, and by the way, I think we could save our country if we, here's how we would save it. This wouldn't be allowed. Every student in our country and at the high school level or maybe earlier should be required to read every one of Jim Mars' books.
Oh, I'm telling you, I agree. It's a college education.
And then write about it. And then the teacher should say, okay, I'm not telling you this is true, but look at his assertions, look at his facts, look at his research, and you go find out if you think it's true or prove to me that it isn't. And if every high school student did that in a generation, we would have a different country.
That's true.
It would never be allowed, but, you know, they're making them stupid now.
Jim, you remember Sherman Skolnick?
Hey, according to your news that just came on before we...
That's not my news.
What they're worried about today is getting transgender people in the girls' locker room.
Oh, God, I couldn't even believe that. We've
just gone into idiocy.
That's misdirection. That's idiotic misdirection, and it makes me want to puke.
Well, let's get on with the assassination, because I want to tell you the remote viewing that both of these men did, it was absolutely incredible. Every time Dick would come up with something, I immediately knew what he was talking about.
Well, you told me that you couldn't believe what you're seeing, because there's things that they're bringing up that you hadn't ever really put too much weight on, because you just had a little feather floating by once or twice. It would suggest... What they came up with.
Well, let me give you a for instance. Dick, you're going to love this one. I'm more than well aware of the old red courthouse there that faces onto Dealey Plaza in downtown Dallas, because it was built in 1895 or something like that. It's been a fixture there, you know, all the years. Me growing up, my partying over in Dallas, and you can't help but go from east to west or vice versa in downtown without going past the old red courthouse. Minute you started describing it, bingo, that's the old red courthouse. But then later on, when you said that you got the impression that there were command and control center there, and that there were people up there because it's the highest place overlooking Dealey Plaza, which is exactly true. I had always been told by informants and by my research that the command center was in the Adolphus Hotel. In fact, there was a fellow named Jim Hicks who I sent photograph of strolling through Dealey Plaza with what looked like a walkie-talkie in his back pocket, following the press bus after Kennedy's motorcade was going by, who told Jim Garrison that he was one of the radio coordinators and that the center was in the Adolphus Hotel. But I always had a problem with that, because the Adolphus Hotel is several blocks further east from Dealey Plaza. You can't see any. You couldn't see the plaza. You couldn't see anything going on.
It was out of the game.
But then, on the 50th anniversary, when I and anyone who knew anything true about the assassination was prevented from going into Dealey Plaza by the city fathers of Dallas, who didn't want any, you had to be vetted by the Dallas police. They had to agree to let you go in there, a public park, okay?
Unbelievable.
They even would not let James Tague, the guy who was wounded on the cheek by bullet fragments in Dealey Plaza, they wouldn't let him in there, okay? Because he was talking about conspiracy. But anyway, I did there. I got close to it. In fact, I sneaked in, and then they ran me out. But I got to tell you, there were men with guns, sharpshooters, in the old red courthouse up on the roof. Okay? So obviously that is the place that you would want to be.
Where's a picture of Bush 41, allegedly Bush 41, standing on the steps in front of a building? Which building is he standing in front of?
He's standing right in front of the Texas School Book Depository.
Okay, that's the one. All right, very good. All right, we got to get on with our story here. Go ahead, Dick.
Okay, well, let me backtrack a little bit, because that building was kind of focal to my session.
That building meaning the courthouse building.
Yeah, I called it the Gothic building. I didn't know it was the courthouse. I never knew that was there. I've been to Dallas once, and I never got to Dealey Plaza. I was in college, and I won the Barney Oldfield scholarship from the Television News Directors Association. They
Barney
gave me
Oldfield.
To give me a-
wow.
Yeah. So I'd never seen that building in relation to the assassination. But
yes, right there. It looks like a medieval castle, sort of.
Yeah. Okay, so the first thing I did when I was working this target, I did a cool down meditation thing and a thing where I do a little breathing exercise, and I actually popped onto target. And I blacked out, and when I came to, I was in a park. I saw green grass and blue sky, and that's the first picture on your website. If people go to rents.com and go over on the left-hand side under my name and Jim's name and click on the photos.
Okay, we're going to put Jim sent me some photos, too. And you'll see those down below, photos from Mars and other things as well. We'll get to that in a little bit. Look for photos from Allgaier in the left-hand side in Guests and open that page up. Okay, Dick, go ahead.
So I had about 10 seconds of being on green grass, blue sky, a clear day. It looked like a park. I didn't know. It felt kind of like a park near Haight-Ashbury in San Francisco that I'd been to when I was 12 years old. So it kind of it just was grass and blue sky, and I didn't see the motorcade going by. I didn't see a few people, but it was more the grass and the sky. And then I thought, oh, am I at target? I need to. What am I supposed to look for? And by thinking that, getting my conscious mind involved, I woke up at my desk and like, oh, well, I got to draw that. So I sketched that and said blue sky and green grass. So
you can see that picture, folks. That's the number one picture. And we're going to go, these are in order and sequence. And what Dick does now, just so you know, is, and you'll be able to buy this session from the Farsight Institute, both Daz and Dick video record their actual sessions. They're alone and they're remote viewing. And you can watch them drawing and putting their own feedback down in terms that you can see on these videos. And that's phenomenal. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Dick. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. So I plopped down in Dealey Plaza. I didn't know it was Dealey Plaza. I didn't recognize it. I thought, well, it's a park. And I drew it, and then I moved on thinking, well, because sometimes I'll drop on, you know, and when I first look at things, I see a lot of images, and some of them aren't right. So I didn't trust that, but I recorded it anyway. You know, it's like you mm-hmm. have to not be afraid of being wrong, okay? This might be wrong, but I'm going to draw it. But it turned out it was, my God, I was in Dealey Plaza in full color on the 22nd of November, 1963.
Okay, that opens the door, and I have to say something. Remote viewing is capable of going forwards and backwards in time.
Yeah.
And when Dick says he was there on November 22nd, he was there sensing. I'm going to ask him. We're going to go through this break, too, Todd. Sensing. Do you have your sense of smell, your sense of feel? Do you have any other sensory input that's coming into your body?
What Glenn Wheaton taught me about remote viewing was law one. Law one is if any sensory data can be obtained via remote viewing, then all sensory data can be obtained by remote viewing.
Wow.
And it's a matter of what are you capable of as a being? You can make it whatever you're capable of making it. Now, sometimes I get a black and white blurry image that's just a flash that's indistinct. And sometimes, once in a while, I can right there, full color experiential. So I had that for 10 seconds. I didn't see the motorcade. I didn't know it was Kennedy. I drew it. I still was lost as to what the target was.
And that's that
so
first picture.
So then I went back.
Right.
Yeah. So next, I reset, and I go, okay, I'm going to look again. And I looked, and I saw this building, and I called it the Gothic building. I thought I was in 1800, like 19th century Europe, because it had the... It just looked spooky, like a castle. And so I drew that.
Look at picture number three, folks. Excuse me, Dick. Look at picture number three, and you'll see Dick remote viewing. He's in an altered state here. He's drawing the building. He says Gothic, 1800s. Look at the spires he's drawing, and then the picture right below it, you'll see the building. Okay? Go ahead.
Hey, Dick. I've got to ask you quickly one quick question.
Yeah.
Were those earplugs or earphones? What were those things you were wearing in your ear?
That's an earbud, because when I remote view, I listen to a theta-inducing tone. It's an entrainment I created.
Right.
Every time I hear that, it's a soundtrack. And for 15 years... I've played this soundtrack, so it entrains my mind. When I hear that, it puts me into that beta-theta state. And
I got you. That's wonderful. And, you know, all of the military remote viewers did something like that. But it always varied. In fact, I was really kind of amazed. Some people would go out and sit in nature. Some people would lay down and kind of stretch out in a divan. Others would sit in chairs. One listened to classical music, and then one listened to jazz or something. I couldn't imagine listening to jazz and trying to go in the meditative state. But they all had their techniques for doing that, and so that's yours, Dick. Great.
Yeah. My teacher listened to heavy metal, like Black Sabbath.
Yeah. I can't imagine it, but okay.
Okay. Well, you play banjo, Jim. Here's what I do now. I have a guitar that I tuned. I found the chord that sounds like where I go in remote viewing.
The entrainment chord?
Frequency.
Well, here's the secret that no one will tell. When you read your book, Psi Spies, and Lynn Buchanan talks about stepping into the beam of the Russian weapon and he could feel it in his body.
Yeah.
No, very few students are able to do that. And what I've heard, because I've asked my teacher over and over again, I'd get him drunk on wine and I'd say, what's the frequency? I mean, what's the tone? I know they use tones. I know they used biofeedback and entrainment, but that's still classified. They can't tell us. I think if we figured it out ourselves, I've been told that there is something a biofeedback that you could use that would put you right onto target immediately.
That's amazing. I didn't know that.
That's really something. Yeah. And you're absolutely right. This is why they stopped my book. This is why they issued that report from Gates and the CIA. When has the CIA ever voluntarily broken open one of their classified programs? It was just incredible. And this is why they put out that movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats, which went and found some of the weirdest stuff they ever tried, put it together, and made it all a kind of a comedy with George Clooney, ha, 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 acting like there's really nothing there, because they don't want the public to know that we all have this ability, and if we would learn to use it, all the secrecy and all the government deceit would go away.
No more secrets, folks.
Yep.
No more secrets. And there, Dick, you just told me something I've never heard, and Jim hadn't either, that there is a, let's call it an ultra-top secret, tone, a frequency, hertz, whatever you want to call it, that will entrain or help the mind get right in there, and you're a viewer, and you can see almost anything you can discipline yourself to go looking for. That's That's a first.
That is really something.
Well,
and yes,
okay.
Let me throw this out, Dick. I don't know if you've thought about this, but, military and Army's remote viewing program was actually a response to the Soviet psychic program, and they were reporting some success.
From the 60s, yeah.
Yeah, all the way back to the 60s. And so we started it. It was kind of funny, really, because my impression was that the Pentagon, the people in the Pentagon said, well, we don't believe this even works, but by golly, if the commies are doing it, we got to do it too. So there was a psychic race along with the arm race. And then when they actually found out that it worked, then you've got the psychics from the Soviet Union coming over looking at us, and we went over and looked at them, and all of a sudden, the Cold War, which was totally built on secrecy, we didn't know what the Soviets had or what their true intentions were, and vice versa, but all of a sudden, the secrecy went away, and the Cold War collapsed.
That's very, very accurate. That's remarkable. No more secrets, folks.
My conclusion that there are tones and frequencies is I don't know that for sure, but it's been hinted to me, and I've been told, somebody told me, Dick, what you guys do is like plowing a field with a teaspoon. You're doing it by your own mind and your own force of will, and I'm really amazed that you're able to do it, I was told, but there is you could be using a tractor. That we have ways to enhance it. Of course, that's. I think it's so far beyond what we know about it that I was told, you know, Jim, they said, oh, yeah, well, there was no intelligence value and they don't use it and they disbanded the program. It's my understanding that most intelligence briefings contain remote viewing data, even today.
Oh, absolutely. What's happened, Dick, is that if you ask the government, do you have a remote viewing program, they'll tell you no, and they're technically telling you the truth. There is no designated unit or organization or agency using remote viewing. But what they have done is two things. Number one, they've taken good remote viewers and embedded them in various organizations, and particularly special ops like the Rangers or the Delta Force, you know. I mean, what commander that's going into a combat situation wouldn't like to have somebody with him who might could tell him what's on the other side of the hill? So, yes, they're still using it. And then if it's civilian application, what they do is they take some of the old remote viewers who are still around and who are now teaching remote viewing, and they contract with them. And they do the remote viewing and then give their results to the government, but the government is in a position where they can claim, no, we don't have an official program.
Right. Yeah.
That's what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they're almost all independent contractors like that, from my understanding of it. Yeah.
Well, in my group, we were given a few targets I know of that it's called a mask. You can mask a target. I could have a remote viewer remote view the Kennedy assassination, and they wouldn't have any idea what it was. They would think it was some Japanese gardener watering the lawn, you know, and like the place that the sprinkler heads would be where the gunshots came from. I know that our group did some targets where what we thought it was wasn't. It was a mask. It was like, oh, we're remote viewing the Russian Revolution. Well, no. If we remote viewed the Russian Revolution, that meant something else happened, and I don't know who that was for. God knows.
But so very interesting. You guys were given targets, obviously, by outsiders. Very interesting.
I did one session that was like 60 pages, and I turned it in, and thank you. Do I get feedback? No. Well, how did I do? Pretty good. Where's my session? In the safe. Do I ever get to know? No.
No.
That's
okay.
Funny.
Yeah.
That's frustrating for a viewer not to get validation.
No, it's not funny, Jeff.
This is
government secrecy gone nuts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
well,
for sure.
That was the price of my training. The agreement for my training was I'll train you, but you got to work some targets for me, and I get all your work. That was the, and I went into that willingly. Okay, you train me, I'll work for you, and you get everything I do.
That's a fair deal.
Yeah.
Fair deal.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You plopped right down in Dealey Plaza. Did you smell it? Did you just you saw the colors? You were able to look around.
Well,
how did it present to you?
Okay, Dealey Plaza was 10 seconds. I didn't get smells. It was a nice day. The sun was high in the sky.
Correct.
The sky was blue.
Correct.
The grass was green. There were a few people. It was not hectic. It was not. I didn't hear gunfire. I didn't know it was Dealey Plaza. So I put that down, and
okay.
that was done. That vision, that by location was done. So then I went to the Gothic building, and I started seeing. I, at that point, thought, well, I think this target is like a haunted building. I think that building's haunted. And I got, like, it's a real creepy place. There's something weird going on in here. I got, like, death and just bad, bad feelings about it. So the Gothic building became my anchor. Every time I'd look, I would see that, and I would move from that to see what else was going on. So I drew the Gothic building, and then I looked another time, and I saw this monument. It looked like white, almost Stonehenge shape. Yeah, and then I statue and a pool.
Yeah, it's got posts. You can see it. Look at the pictures, folks. Look at his drawing, and then you'll see a photograph of what he was remote viewing. Fascinating.
And I said, it's like the father of our town, like the Confederate general or somebody, a statue of somebody that it's like somebody that's famous in our town from
it's
the past.
George Dealey.
I didn't get a name.
It is a statue of George Dealey, who founded the Dallas Morning News, and that's what Dealey Plaza is.
Look at Dick's drawing, ladies and gentlemen. See the statue on the right? See the posts and beams of the monument itself?
And then, when you see me drawing, what I'm drawing is a bus. And in the tape, I say, well, there's people come here to look at this monument, and they come here, the tour buses bring them here to look at this place.
Yeah.
Okay, so there's a hint. I'm still not thinking. I didn't know Dealey Plaza. I didn't know where it was. I still was thinking, oh, this is something to do with Europe in the 1800s because of the look of that building and the feel of that building. By this point, I don't want to say confused, but I didn't have any sense of what the target was. I didn't care, but I seemed to be getting data that was coming through, and it had the right feel to me, that kind of, it has a kind of a spooky, ethereal, it's just a strange feeling, the way the remote viewing data comes across to you. So then I start,
Go ahead, Dick.
Okay, so then I start seeing other buildings, and they're like mid-sized buildings that seem to be 20th century, not 18th century.
Uh-huh.
So I'm confused. I'm going, well, God, am I slipping in time or what? My focus seems to be, the most important thing to me seems to be this Gothic building.
Yeah, I see the next drawing. Yeah, look at the next drawing, folks.
Oh, uh-huh. There's a lot of people on the street. Okay, there's people lining the street. And then I heard, boom, boom, like buses, cars, and there's motor vehicles. And I smelled the fumes. I smelled bus fumes and gas fumes. So I'm thinking, well, okay, this isn't 1800s Europe because there's cars and there's people on the street. So I start looking at the people. Like, okay, why are these people here on the street? So there's ways that we probe for that. And I'm saying, well, they're dressed pretty nice. Like the women are in dresses, like not formal dresses, but they're in dresses. They don't dress the way people do today. It was like men had ties on and work shirts.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, okay, these people work here and live here. Some of them came here from somewhere else, and I go, but then there's people that come on buses to see this place. So I'm getting confused. And then I said, okay, why are they here? And I said, this is like a flash mob. It's just they all just came, and I didn't know why. It's like, well, why do these people come in front of this Gothic building and all assemble there, and they're all milling around, and they're like looky-loos, like we're going to look at something. And like, oh, maybe they're going to see somebody famous that's going to come by.
This is
interesting, Jim. You pointed this out to me, that the motorcade did not go in front of the building. And that was kind of an assumption on my part, because I said, oh, there's motor vehicles going by. So I drew them on the wrong street.
Yeah. Yeah, you only have one street coming down, and actually there's a jog there. When you come past the Old Red Courthouse, you're on Main Street, and they had to turn north on Houston for a very short block, and then turn back on a 120-degree turn onto Elm Street to go down through the plaza, and you missed one of the streets. There's three streets in there, actually.
All right, we have to pause here, and... let's collect our mental notes where we have gone in this first hour. We're going to come back and do hour number two with Jim and Dick in just a couple minutes. Look at the pictures. I'm sure all of you who have been following this get it. That's Dick in his remote viewing state of mind, and he is getting more data, and he is writing on a whiteboard with felt tip pens, more pictures. And he's got that old Gothic building, and then there's a new building across the street. And, yeah, I can see how that's confusing for sure. But he stayed with it, and we'll find out where it goes when we come back in just a few minutes. So hang on.